Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Before we start tonight's show, I'd like to tell you about a new series called Hercules and the Space Gods. Hercules and the Space Gods is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through our podcast on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in Tim Beckley's paranormal anthologies, a variety of live and now mostly Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space Gods, like all our cosmic initiatives, supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. Tonight, I'm proud to bring you Nick Curto Presents The Disclosure Network. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules. I am very well. And it's a little cold here in Manhattan, but I understand that next week it's going to be in the 50s and possibly almost touching 60. So we're really very happy and thrilled with that weather news.
Oh, certainly. That is awesome news. I know it's pretty cold here in Tenafly, New Jersey as well.
Oh, I can imagine.
And I'm looking forward to tonight's show. It's part two of Ancient Lost Civilizations in New England. So I'm really looking forward to listening to it.
Okay, we will begin right now. Thank you so much. You are, I have to say again, because I want to, you are the best producer anybody could possibly have. So I just want to thank you for all your efforts. Really, it's so appreciated.
And I thank you, and I thank you for all of yours as well.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to start right off. This is this program is Nick Curto Presents the Disclosure Network. I'm Nick Curto, co-founder and director of Disclosure Network New York, and your host for tonight's live podcast. DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 20th. I can't believe it has been that long, but it is our 20th year of providing two meetings a month throughout the year in Manhattan. We focus on cutting-edge UFO, ET issues, paranormal phenomenon of many, many different kinds, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of areas, and as we go deep into these exciting and sometimes very, very misunderstood subjects that the mainstream press will not talk about or ever discuss. Our members do intensive investigative research, and our members are amazing. They really are into these various cutting-edge topics, and share that information with the group at our meetings and with the on the internet with our followers on YouTube. We have a lot of programming on YouTube right now under Disclosure Network New York. We are now currently doing Zoom meetings only twice a month until COVID is totally gone, and our venue that we hold our meetings face-to-face in the West Village of New York City reopens. And certainly we can't wait for that to happen. I miss so much seeing all of our members. Our Zoom meetings for our members are held on the first and third Sundays of each month throughout 2021. If you'd like the details on our membership, you can get to me, and I will give you that information by email. I'm going to give you my email address right now. So if you get a pen and a piece of paper, I'll go slowly and I'll say it twice. My email address is NICKNYNY, the numeral 1 at gmail.com. Let me repeat that. NICKNYNY, the numeral 1 at gmail.com. Our motto right from day one is, quote, connecting the dots to seek truth, unquote. We have available to all of our members worldwide the DNNY News Blast email service, focusing on the most important topics of special interest. Our website, if you'd like to go there and take a look at us, we are at www.dnny.com. dnny.info. I'm going to repeat that, dnny.info. And so there you go. By becoming a member, you'll be accessing all of our other members and what they're thinking and researching. And you'll also be receiving invitations to our meetings. That will now be, of course, from Zoom. And all the cutting-edge news, and occasionally we'll do a special event. So all that is available to our members. Okay, with that said, I am so looking forward to our guest tonight. This will be part two of an amazing, amazing man with an amazing life story, Jeffrey Pray Witham. How are you tonight, sir?
I am happy, I'm healthy, and ready to roll.
All right, we're going to rock and roll, my friend. We are.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. I love your energy, Jeffrey. I picked up on that right away. Let me just first do briefly a very quick introduction to you, and then we'll get right to it, all right?
Okie doke.
For the last 60 years, Mr. Witham has compiled a vast pictorial that shows lost civilizations hidden within the fields and forests of New England. And by the way, I was born and raised in New England in Massachusetts. Maintaining this lifelong outdoor connection, including a childhood background zoo, a career as a real estate broker, focusing on raw land, and to his current explorations in recent decades. He has dedicated much of his life to looking for ancient evidence of what was going on in the areas, and also looking for connections with ley lines and electromagnetic frequencies. That really interests me too, Jeffrey. His passion for finding, understanding what was going on with monoliths and beyond doubt, uncovering ancient intelligence. And boy, that is an incredible subject. Jeffrey uses his art, artifacts, and photographs in PowerPoint presentations at various public and private organizations, and that includes the Ancient Artifact Preservation Society. He shares some of his collection on his website. And Jeffrey, I want to give them your website right away because they really should take a look at this. It's quite something. So here we go. I'm going to repeat it twice. www.woodswalker.net, N-E-T. I'm going to repeat that, woodswalker.net. And when you get a moment, please take a look at that. It's quite something. So again, Jeffrey, I so welcome you here, and we're going to do part two of your amazing, amazing life story.
Great. And thank you, Mr. Curto, for the opportunity to express myself and to share with a diverse audience and hopefully enlighten and excite and cause others to walk the woods and try to see as I see it, and so be it. I will begin.
The first time you were here, you absolutely lit a fire under me that when the weather gets better in the late spring, I'm going to be out there. So, and I'm sure many other of our listeners feel the same way.
Wonderful. May I just begin in that hidden in the woods of New England, amongst the trees, amongst the scrub, the underbrush, is a civilization that, it has the big three. It has the art, it has artifacts and architecture, which is housing and habitation sites that are skipped right over. Mainstream geologists call these terminal moraines, where indeed boulder upon boulder is placed generally on a south or east facing slope. And these boulders in mega sizes, in hundreds of tons, create hollows and rooms between them and tunnels. And I find that to be kind of my last frontier to go into these tunnels and into the cave system hidden deep underground within the hills of New England.
And Nicholas, Jeffrey, when I went to school in New England, we still do have an excellent system in the schools, but I never got any inkling that this was going on or that it was happening. I had no idea, nor did anybody else that I'm aware of that even knew about this. And here you are exploring and coming up with some amazing photographs and research.
It's absolute joy. It fuels and creates an energy that fuels more energy to pursue it and photograph it, and as to take a statement of yours, connect the dots.
Yes, which you certainly are.
And in connecting these dots, Nick opened it up with ley lines and geomagnetic energies. And that's a wonderful place, let's say, to express it as such. For in numerous sites in New England, there are these stone piles that most will call a cairn, and most state geologists will call a field clearing created by the colonists. But they are not field clearings. These are vertical stones placed on, so that you get 4, 7, 10 in a pile. You might get a pile that has 40 of them, and the little pile goes 3 feet high. And I've seen amazing constructs like up in October Mountain State Forest in Massachusetts, where some of these are approaching 12 to 13 feet high.
Wow.
And what do they do? There's so many of them in clusters. There might be 20 in a group. There might be 40 in a group. And they're spaced out. So be it this spacing, they might be 12 feet apart. They might be 14, 16 feet apart. The fun part is when one has a dowsing rod, and that is a metallic, I use a type of brazing rod that is an iron core, copper clad, copper coated, and I have about a 9-inch handle, and I bend it at 90 degrees so that I have a 90-degree 9-inch handle that then shoots out 20, 22 inches. So I go and walk along as if holding two pistols in front of me. And as I approach some of these cairns, or many of them, at one direction, the rods will close as I walk over the cairn or approach it. And then if I step back and go 90 degrees to that which I just walked, they will close. So I get an opening and a closing.
Wow.
Depending on the angle that bisects at 90 degrees. And some of the rocks, I'm sorry, go ahead, Nick.
I was just saying that I was at a lecture, and what you're introducing here is really fascinating for me, and I'm sure for many others. And one of the reasons they do that is to try to locate water. Is that not correct?
Well, you can use a fruit tree bough that's cut and strip it of its twigs so that it forms a Y, and hold it in a certain way that an absolutely apple bough, a pear bough, will go down at such horrendous force that it will strip the bark as you try to hold it back. It wants to go down. I'm using dowsing rods, and I don't know if it's water that I'm detecting. I believe it could be some sort of a flow, says a dear friend of mine who uses dowsing rods constantly and have done extensive work in what he calls the flow. I don't believe that it's water. I believe it's some kind of a pulse of a flow of Mother Earth that relates to a very Tesla type theory, in that this flow is a geomagnetic force over the skin of Mother Earth.
My feeling is that you were right on the money. I think that that makes total sense to me. And yes, that's amazing.
Well, and then what's truly amazing is there was one site that I was absolutely blown away. For a lady who accompanied me to a site up in Fitzwilliams, New Hampshire, had the dowsing rods, and we were going over certain anomalies or eruptions to the topography that I asked her, would you come here and try it? Would you come here and try it? So then there was an incredible pile, again, a cairn, but the pile of stones was like 24 inches across, each stone possibly having 30 stones making this pile. So it was big stones forming up. And when she went over that, it neither opened nor closed, but it helicoptered in opposing directions, the dowsing rods.
Incredible. Incredible. Absolutely amazing.
Now,
and so the energy, you're saying that energy is coming from the earth. I totally understand that. I really do. And also, what is the energy? Just got to ask you, with the idea of a wooden, from a tree, a living tree, and then finding water, what is the energy going on? Is it the person? Is it what is it that's causing that? Do you have any idea?
Well, I wish I could channel some great intelligence and come up with the absolute why, but some people can do it, and some people cannot. And I think it has to do with maybe their own biochemistry that interact with Mother Earth in a special way.
Yeah, that's indeed possible. It's a fascinating subject, really is. So you're experiencing that.
There is another fine man out in Catskill, New York, who's a unique soul in his own right, who's a logger, and he hunts the backwoods of the Catskill. He's with a hunting party a few years ago, and they each have heavy-duty rifles, and one man lays the rifle down on a bedrock outcrop. Now, this is really off the wall, for then he can hardly pick up his rifle. The magnetic pull is so intense.
Wow. Oh, that's wild. That is.
If I could add this possibility, he tells me he can take me to that site and show it to me, and I've got to do that to indeed absolutely know where it is. For I now know that we have invented materials that will insulate against magnetism.
Wow.
And I truly believe I can create a little erector set, kind of a Ferris wheel made of plastic with metallic seats or paddles that will create rotary motion. So if I block out half of the Ferris wheel, it will only have downward motion, and the spin should start, so then it goes into the neutral area that's protected by the insulation, and that should create intense rotary motion to light a light bulb. I can't wait to try and do that and have it filmed.
I was going to just suggest that. Make sure that it is recorded, either video or film itself, because that would be quite a moment. You want to certainly document that.
I would say so. It's as exciting as having our ET friends land in the backyard and have a soda pop. You know, it's exciting.
You bet it is.
Now,
some of our members in Disclosure Network New York have reported and have given some very detailed accounts of encounters, either with thought, with visual, and in some cases, with actual times when they were with ETs. And there's been a lot of amazing and, in some cases, documented footage of some of the things that they were experiencing. So this goes on. Okay, Jeffrey, please go ahead. I'm fascinated.
Okay. And so Jeffrey Whittem, and I'd like to correct you, and not to embarrass you, but correct you, it is not 60 years that I've been walking the woods gathering megalithic information on a lost civilization. It's about the last 20.
And so I want
that to be understood. But indeed, in the 20 years, I've got quite an arsenal of various subject matter that we're going to now explore. And so these boulders can be placed on bedrock and placed in the uphills. Here's a phenomenon that I've discovered. There's hardly any large megalith at all in the Central Valley of Connecticut called the Connecticut River Valley. You don't find massive boulders. When I get into the eastern hills and the western hills of Connecticut, my Lord, and the higher up I go, it seems the bigger the boulders get, which is somewhat anti-erratic glacial theory. Be it, these cannot be glacially deposited. Why aren't there any mega monsters in the central Connecticut River Valley and only on the east and west hills?
Interesting.
Yes. And then some of these will be, my Lord, have mercy. Some of these rocks, boulders, will be 1,000 tons. Without a doubt, there is one that pops right into my head in Southwick, Massachusetts. It is 65 feet long, about 46 feet wide, and 27 feet high.
That's incredible.
And it stands alone.
I have relatives who happen to live in Southwick.
Well, there's one there. There's one.
Amazing, beautiful lakes that are right there.
This is as big as a house, if not bigger than a house. It is remarkable. And that stone then connects to a line of stones that go kind of a northeast, southwest orientation. A line of these goes right through a golf course, much smaller, I might say. Much smaller, and I followed this line. I would love to get in a helicopter or some kind of a drone and fly it. For I once, when I figured out, God, this is a line of these things that ties right into that mega boulder hidden in the woods, and there's a line that goes right 2.5 miles out. I got out of my car, and so the boulders were in front of me, going through the golf course, and the boulders were behind me. I could see going up over a small hill, and 2.5 miles away was Proven Mountain, a radio-powered high point in the Agawam, I'm going to call it Westfield area.
Isn't that where Channel 22 has their basic
exactly. power? Exactly. That's where Channel 22 sends out its signal.
Yep. And living in Springfield, that rings a bell. Yes.
And so then I started to go and see these lineals in the woods. But they're so much harder to follow because of the trees and the steeper topography. And then another absolute phenomenon is the repeating patterns. The repeating patterns show, without a doubt, that this is not a natural construct. This is not a natural placement. For in some of my photographs, I've got like 12 miles apart in central Mass. One of the towns is Ware, Massachusetts, New Braintree and Ware, Massachusetts area, and the Brookfields of central Massachusetts.
Huh.
And they lay
these stones are not very high. They're probably 4.5 feet high, 5 feet high, 2.5 feet, 3 feet thick. But there's three of them that lay on a slight angle, all abutting each other, like if you had sliced pieces of bread and you laid them at a 35-degree angle, the three of them would be in tangency. But I've got two independent sites 12 miles apart that are made of different stone that are the exact same placement and angles and size.
Wow. That's incredible. That is incredible. Have you ever explored Quabbin Reservoir area?
Quabbin Reservoir is a secret science unto itself. For the Quabbin Reservoir, with its 253 square miles of woodland, is the collection square footage for Boston's water supply.
Oh.
And there are four towns that were extracted, or they exhumed bodies out of that, the base of the Quabbin Reservoir. I believe one was Enfield, Dana, Windsor, and Prescott. Are these four towns now underwater? But it is a pristine area. That Quabbin Reservoir and all that's around it, they created this reservoir in the 20s and 30s, I believe, and it's just pristine, loaded with evidence.
Loaded. You know what? I'm not surprised, and I've always been bowled over with how beautiful that particular area is, and so I had to ask you that question. Thank you.
Okay. I've got a little bit of notation here. So I've talked about boulders. But here's a fun one concerning these boulders. There's many that are on High Point, and High Point is the highest little hill, little elevation, and there seem to be so much more concentration of placed boulders and balanced rocks on the shoreline of New England. Go about 15 miles in from the shoreline all the way up through Connecticut and Mass and into New Hampshire and Maine. It's remarkable how concentrated this lost civilization is in such a ribbon. And the boulders therein will have, as I say, picture a high point, and then on top is a boulder simply placed. Then there'll be a one prop, I call it. So there'll be a smaller stone that kicks up so that part of this upper part of the balance rock sits on the bedrock, while there's a spacer stone, a substone of one, placed underneath. So I call it a one prop boulder. Then there are two prop boulders so that there's two stones under. When indeed you find three, the rock is totally off the bedrock, balanced on three points. So as if you created a tripod for your camera and put a boulder on top, the big boulder on top never touches the bedrock.
That is absolutely incredible engineering. And for such a long, long time ago, that is just mind-blowing. Absolutely amazing.
Can I tell you, you're very lucky. In your home state, in North Salem, New York, there is a boulder that's 60 tons, and it's been photographed and spoken about for many of my contemporaries and others who are interested in this subject matter. It's in North Salem, New York. I believe it's en route, could be 116. It's right on the road. You can drive by it. All you people in New York, go up and have a peek at that thing. And you'll be amazed, for it has five substones under it.
Wow. Wow. The engineering of that, Ben, is just absolutely amazing. How in the world did they do that? How could they move such massive stones, many tons? How in the world could they do that?
I believe this is what is the fun part, for I believe whoever or what intelligence created this, they created it with technology we know nothing about.
No, I can imagine that's true. Adrian, one of your dearest friends and a new friend of mine, she's so wonderful and amazing, and she has such incredible stories of her own, and she gave me a couple of interesting tidbits that I would love to ask you. Can I do that, one of them?
Oh, absolutely. 80 is a wonderful contributor to my life.
She's truly a wonderful person, and one of the things she mentioned was that in certain locations of the forest that you were photographing, you could not get a clear picture no matter what. It looks as if you had your camera spinning around like a pinwheel, and the further out to the photograph perimeter you went, the clearer the photograph becomes, and there is no spiral blur. It only happens at a particular locations. In addition, several locations appear to have trees with branches growing in a particular direction, as if influenced by an unseen force. They appear to be reaching out. Is this a sign that something else is going on in the way of a force field?
I think 80s said it probably as good as anyone. I love the term force field. I love the term that indeed there's such a heavy electrical infusion around these boulders that it interferes with my digital camera and will not allow me to focus.
That is really quite amazing. Another question too that came up was one time in the woods, you were with a friend and you had some unseen force push you in the direction of one of your finds, and that it was possibly Bigfoot or God only knows what. In recent years, are there any other things that you're aware of, such as that?
Well, that happened on the Prescott Peninsula of the Quabbin Reservoir, to be honest with you.
Really?
Eons ago, a gentleman I was with, we chummed and connected to each other, and he heard of a stone chamber that was in this old farm that you had to skinny through an opening that was a chain link to stay. And so we found a hole and walked through where numerous people had done. And one day we were looking for this stone chamber was our quest. And it was a late September or mid-September day. The goldenrod was turning, fall was coming on, but the farm was not a plowable, tillable farm. Mother Nature was reclaiming it with undergrowth and briars and multifloral rows and such snarl of undergrowth. And we were there for 2.5 hours looking for this stone chamber. And I could not make heads or tail out of it. And after a while, I began to get frustrated and disgusted. So there was a road, the original old road that went down to the now underwater town of Prescott. And on the Prescott Peninsula, I was on this road that was a bisector of a slope. So I had the uphill behind me going up the hill, and the downhill below me was my friend still down in this brush. And I said, I have had it. I'm not going to look for this thing anymore. And while I'm standing on the road, so help me, ladies and gentlemen, something belted me in the back, and I fell forward with gusto down the slope into the goldenrod and the gnarliness of all the underbrush. And I looked up, and there was nothing up on the road. Now, here's what's outrageous. For when I started to climb up and to get back upon the road, I noticed the opening to the stone chamber under the road.
Oh, wow. Oh, brother. Oh, I'd love to have seen your face at that moment. I really would have.
I started crying.
I don't blame you. I would have too. That's not a coincidence. That could not be. That is like someone tapping you on the shoulder and saying, "Wake up! You're standing in it."
And so when that happened, I barked and screamed. I said, "I found it! I found it! I found it!" And he replied with some four-letter words that I didn't. But anyway, there it was.
You know, Jeffrey, I got to say, you might have found it, or so you thought, but maybe it found you?
Well, I believe I've got help. I have a developing psychic side of me that's somewhat exciting, and I'm exploring that in myself. And something's been guiding me in the woods for a long time. Seeing we started on this one, I will continue in other other situations. Once on the Blue Trail, a state-marked hiking trail, many people walk it on the eastern ridge of the Connecticut River Valley. It's called the Schnipset Trail, and I'm alone, and it's summertime, and I'm walking out there just feeling the woods and going to start looking for things, but it's extremely leafed out. It's the middle of the summer, which is not the best time to go. I stopped dead in the middle of the Blue Trail, and I feel a force pull me, in essence, go to the right, and I walked off the trail being guided by something, and I walked close to 600 feet through extremely leafed-out scrub and walked into one of the most profound balanced rocks in Tallinn County, Connecticut, I've ever seen.
So you have been downloaded. This is an example of you being downloaded. Something is doing that. Obviously, it's there, and it's working, and it's certainly working with you. I would say with you, and it's helping you. That is quite a story.
Not only is it helping me, I am kind of aware of it. And I talked to it, and I thank it for all of the good fortune when things as such come out of nowhere.
Yeah. I understand that on one of your lowest health points of your life, health-wise, that you were healed internally. Could you elaborate on that?
Oh, sure. Grew up in a household that a lot of arguments, a lot of alcohol, in my opinion. Okay. I had an elder brother who beat me, and I grew up a stutterer, and I grew up damaged psychologically, and I developed an antisocial fear that erupted in what I'm going to call a panic attack, and the panic attacks got so severe that they would twist and contort my intestines, and I could not walk, I could not crawl. I was on my hands and knees for 3 days in extreme pain and would release a black stool. So I was bleeding internally, and I felt as though I was dying. And
oh, my God.
And I read the Bible, and I connected to Jesus Christ, the healer, in my mind. And it was the verse of Mark chapter 11, verses 22 through 26, that simply goes that, "Truly, truly, I say to you, whosoever says to this mountain, 'Be thou removed and cast to the sea,' and does not doubt in his heart, but truly believes in what he asks, it will be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you receive it and you will. And when you stand praying, forgive if you hold anything against anyone. For if you do not forgive, then neither will your Father who is in heaven forgive you of your trespasses." That's King James. And so I realized I had to forgive my older brother who beat me. I was so beaten that I was afraid to go home at night at age 13 and would get riddles and chills going home. But it developed. I had a teacher in the third grade mimic my stuttering, and keep me behind the piano all day long as punishment for stuttering. I don't think anyone has heard me stutter much this evening. And back to this healing. And so I pictured the praying hands holding and touching a very taut string, which were my guts, my intestines. I knew it was my intestines, all tied up into a knot. And I would picture the praying hands. People have seen it in a number of churches and basements and whatnot. I believe it was a German artist that created these two praying hands. And I would develop the meditative state over 2.5 years. When I would have these attacks, I would pray and believe that I was going to be healed. And one day, alone in the house that I grew up in pain, in agony, I heard a voice, and it was neither male nor female. And the voice said as eloquently as this, "Be a friend to all, let no man go under, and the love of Jesus Christ is the greatest gift I can give to mankind." When I heard that, ladies and gentlemen, the pain stopped like a light switch or a shotgun went off, and it has never come back.
What an inspirational story that is. Oh, Jeffrey, I have to say, I am so sorry that you had to be exposed to such cruelty early on in your life. That there's no excuse at all for that. But the fact that you rose above it and that you managed to forgive and forget and go on with your life and be the kind of guy that you are now. You know, I got to also say, you talked about stuttering. I could see you doing Shakespeare on a stage. You have a wonderful voice. You do. You have a wonderful voice. I could easily see you really as an actor doing wonderful Shakespeare, because and that's a compliment. So I just wanted to let you know that's exactly how I'm feeling.
Well, there's when I circulate with people in my daily, go out and meet the people of Connecticut, the people of Mass and such, I've really, in a deep prayer state, I ask God to heal me of all the things that I detest about myself. And literally, what has been conquered is stuttering, alcoholism, panic attacks, and I'm going to say psychosis. And I sometimes call myself the luckiest man I've ever met.
I wouldn't argue with that. I would not. Your story is inspirational. I had no idea that was going on, but thank you so much for sharing such a personal story. It's inspiring. Also, I got to ask you another question, if I may. I know it's getting already. We're
yep.
getting to like 12 minutes, but I understand that when you were very, very young, there was an actual battle in your bedroom between an angel and a demon, and the angel told you to hide your eyes, which you did, but you could hear the ruckus, and it sounded like a big fight. Could you give
that
me
happened,
some idea?
That happened in and around the 44th year of my life.
Oh, really? I didn't
know
that. Okay.
Not in my childhood.
Okay, okay. And
but indeed, that is true.
Wow.
Would you like to hear that one?
You bet I would. You bet. I think our listeners are getting closer to their speakers. Please go ahead.
Okay. In all of my self-loathing growing up, in all of the self-doubt that I had, in all the insecurity that developed, I'm going to say I became an alcoholic. And in that time, that was one of the requests that I was going to go after to be healed, and of which, ladies and gentlemen, I might say that when I had come to that point in my life, I had gone to two AA meetings and felt I'm going nowhere with this. So I went back to the woods, and in a prayer state, in about 2 months of time, I was totally healed of alcohol and have never had a drop. I'm probably 33 years without a drop of alcohol.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
In and around that time, when I was being freed of alcohol, I remember a friend said, why don't you stay at this house tonight instead of driving home? So I went upstairs, and in a bedroom alone, went to bed, but I did not fall asleep immediately. And I'm going to tie all this in, for it was Mark 11 that I said earlier. And so that held a very dear thing unto my heart and soul. And so when I looked up in a moonlit bedroom, here was a hooded figure at the base of my bed. I could not see the face, but it had a long hood over the face of sorts, like the Grim Reaper. And when I looked at this, what in the dickens is this? A voice said to me, don't look at his face. Turn your face away. He's come to eat your soul. And I said, is that you, Mark? And the voice replied, no, it's John. And so I then heard this incredible fist fight in the room of punching and furniture being knocked around and broken.
Wow.
And I buried my head in the pillow and never saw anything but heard this ruckus that vibrated the bed and all of this. And thus it was quiet. And I remember listening, and it was told to me to get again with the same voice of John, you may go. We have saved you.
Huh.
Pretty intense.
How did you feel at that point? How would you feel at that point?
Numb.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow, that's quite an encounter.
Whew. Yeah.
Oh, you have me on the edge of my chair.
But Nick, I will also say I am pleased as punch to tell the listening audience these personal stories.
Well, you know, doing that, you help everyone. And I know that that's true, that when someone shares something personal that is very meaningful to them, and it also ends up being inspirational, you're inspiring many, many others. And I can't think of anything more wonderful than that. It's getting close to the time, so I just want to tell our listeners at this point, I'll take a moment out from our interview, Jeffrey, just to say that if anybody would like to ask either Jeffrey or me a question, or if you'd like to make a comment, we welcome that. I'm going to give you my email again, and if you will email me that, I will make sure that I or Jeffrey get your letter, and we will respond. So I'm going to give you that again. It is Nick, which is N-I-C-K, N-Y-N-Y, the numeral 1, at gmail.com. Again, Nick, N-Y-N-Y 1, at gmail.com. And we will certainly welcome any of your thoughts, comments, or questions. Jeffrey, this has been an amazing ride. I really admire your truthfulness, and I think that's propelling you to your discoveries for sure. You are on the right side of things, and I just feel as though your energy, your welcoming, loving energy, is making a difference. And that is profound. That is wonderful. Can you imagine a world if we all were doing that all the time? It would be a totally different world.
Well, there'd be no need for this war machine that we are losing a third of our GNP to every year.
Oh, boy, so. That is so true. That is so true. And it could be used to house the homeless, to feed the hungry. That there's enough money with the war machines to do all that and a great deal more. And yet we have to turn that. We have to turn that around. We don't need a Department of War. We need a Department of Peace. That's what we need.
That's right. If I could close it, it was in the three requests and statements unto me. The last was that the love of Jesus Christ is the greatest gift I can give to mankind.
Wow. You know, I'm a student of the Urantia book, and one of the things that stood out on the pages, it's a very thick, thick book, 2,000 pages, but one of the statements that totally stood out, and I'm going to share it right now with you in the audience, and it just jumped out at me, and it was that there isn't a hell that we've been told there is, with fire and hurt and all that, but here it comes from the Urantia book. It says, but the closest thing to that would be a person not knowing the limitless love of God the Father. Of not knowing the limitless love of God the Father. Absolutely stood right out to me. What an amazing statement of faith.
Do I have enough time to close with this poem on one page? The title of it is Seek Him.
Our producer, Hercules, how much time do we have now?
We have 8 minutes. I need a minute at the end of that to make an announcement.
Okay, so Jeffrey, can you do it?
Altogether.
Okay, go ahead then, Jeffrey, please.
Okay, on one page, if anyone would like this poem, I'll make sure that Mr. Nicholas Curto has it. I wrote it 28, 29 years ago. It came extremely fast, and it's on one page, and I've given it out over 3,000 times to various people along the path of my life. And I know that one person has it folded up in their wallet who lived under a bridge. Another person said that we're going to frame it and put it on my desk. And that was someone who held a position in the Hartford Diocese of the Catholic Church. And the poem goes like this. And it came from all of what I just said. The basic core of this poem is of Mark 11, 22 through 26. The poem, Seek Him. The times they stink, you've had enough. You wish you were made of stronger stuff. You look inside, it's your soul you seek, and you wish to hell you weren't so weak. It's life's agony and pain that got me here. I'm so filled with doubt, so filled with fear. I look back on my life, all the wasted years, so filled with sorrow, so filled with tears. How do I take myself from this self-made hell? How do I free myself from this wicked spell? It's God I seek to tell him my story. Such lack of joy, no personal glory. I talk to God with a questing heart and search for that place called a brand new start. I ask him in to heal me deep. It's his love and healing that I seek. The mountain will move and fall to the sea. He's come at last to set me free.
Oh, boy. Wow. Oh, congratulations. Oh, that was so perfect. Thank you so much for sharing that. I want a copy, too. I'm going to frame that.
You'll get it.
Wow.
You'll get it. I'm on my way to the Big Apple in a few weeks or less, so I'll be seeing you.
Oh, that is wonderful that you wrote that. Oh, brother, that says so much. It covers such a wide gamut.
That is for all denominations and all people of the planet.
Absolutely is. That's a given, and it just cuts through everything to the important stuff, to the bottom line. Congratulations, Jeffrey. Really, you've impressed me. You always do, but that really is something I didn't expect. That was great.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Well, we're getting there close now, so I'm going to give the send-off now. First of all, absolutely a very heartfelt thanks to you, Jeffrey, for sharing your insights with us tonight on my podcast. I really would ask you to do a part 3 in the spring, because there's so much more to your story, and I think that certainly me and the listeners would want to know much more. So would you be willing to do a part 3 at some time soon?
Oh, of course, absolutely. Absolutely, sir.
Excellent. Okay, I'll give you dates and we can figure that out. All right, so I'm going to do the close now. So much love to you, Jeffrey, and this is Nick Curto for Disclosure Network New York, wishing you all an enlightened journey as you connect the dots to seek truth. Till next time, keep informed, stay safe, and be kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Take good care.
And thanks to both of you. That was an awesome show.
Thank you, Hercules. Sir, Hercules.
Looking forward to part three.
Hercules.
Yes, sir.
Are you affiliated with Timothy Beckley?
Yes. I've been published in maybe 15 or so books of Timothy Beckley's.
Can I tell you, I just received one of his copies called Alien Lives Matter, It's Okay to Be Gray.
I'm in there.
And he put me in there, in and around page 116.
Awesome. I got a copy of the book, too. I have to look you up now. I have to read what you wrote.
Well, indeed, he wrote it. I don't know how he ever heard of me. I asked, how did you hear of me? I've never even heard of Timothy Beckley till the phone rang about 5 to 6 weeks ago. And he said I was in The Guardian, a publication out of England.
Oh, wow. I've known Tim Beckley for decades. He's an awesome individual, and he's kept alive a lot of lore that otherwise would have been lost.
Well, and that's what rebounded in my mind, because I remember seeing your name in. He sent me four books.
Oh, wow.
These were wonderful gifts. And he also said he would like me to be on his podcast on the 18th of March.
That is fantastic. I've been on his podcast a couple of times. He's been on mine a few times. Tim Swartz, who is one of his writing and editing partners, was on the show yesterday. And Olaf Phillips, who frequently contributes to Tim's books, who has Paranoia Magazine, he was on yesterday as well. So
isn't this something?
And I sent to Nick, Mark, and Phyllis Brinkeroff have their own show now, too. So it's one big family.
There you go. Thank you so much, Hercules.
You're very welcome, and thank you. And I look forward to talking to you soon. And I just have a quick announcement to give. Thanks, first of all, to everybody who's tuned in, whether you listened live, whether you called in. We have a long list of people who called in, or whether you're going to listen to us later on demand. Until next time, we wish you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And I will repeat my Olympian star seeds are embodied reflections of Olympus's light that have chosen to drink the waters of forgetfulness and enter the dream of mortality to assist in the great awakening on Gaia. The Olympian star seeds initiative is tasked with locating and liberating incarnate Olympians ensnared by the dream of mortality and reminding them of their Olympian mission. The Olympian Starseeds Initiative, mindful that archetypal Olympian patterns have been programmed into the human psyche, believe in assisting all people on Gaia with actualizing their maximal potential. If these words resonate with you, you can contact me on Facebook or through my website. Until next time, be well. And for the few seconds we have remaining, we'll end with If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky. But only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real,